Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
I love it when we can talk to some great resources, such as a historian that knows a lot about the professional and college game. And we found that in our guest tonight, who's wrote about a dozen books and wrote many articles for the Coffin Corner, the PFRA publication, on football books. Our guest comes up in just a moment to tell us all about him and his works.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of pigskindispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another edition where we get to talk to a great historian that's going to tell us a few aspects about football history that maybe we haven't aren't familiar with, but we're going to become familiar tonight. Tonight we have John Maxima, a PFRA member, fellow with myself, that has written some articles for the Coffin Corner that are quite interesting. And John's going to talk about that and his football passion. John Maxima, welcome to the Pigpen.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, John, I guess our paths first crossed here as I was reading a PFRA article just recently, and it has the 2023 PFRA bookshelf. And I remember seeing this in some other editions, you know, other years, and it's penned by you. It was just kind of an interesting subject, which I guess we'll come around and talk about here in a moment. But I guess first, let's learn a little bit about you and what brought you to the point of being a PFRA historian. You said you have a blog out and writing articles for the Coffin Corner.
Well, I've written, at least a dozen books on pro football history over the years, over the past 20 some years. I've kept busy with that. I've written with Coffin Corner, I think I've got about 30 articles in there, plus they do the annual bibliography of football books. I've been done that for like maybe 10 years. I don't know. I'm a librarian, so kind of fit in. I forget how it came about. I think Mark Doerr, the editor, just asked me if I wanted to do it. I said, sure. So, and kept it up since then. Yeah, like I said, and as you mentioned, I had a blog going. It's on Packer history, Packers Past Perfect. And that I did that not only to do some writing, but also have this strange offbeat hobby of creating football cards. So a lot of it with older things and like taking black and white photographs, colorizing them, and then, you know, putting them in different football card frames. So, I mean,
it's interesting. There's nothing strange about that at all. That's interesting.
I've made complete team sets for the Packers from 1920 through last year. And more recently, I've been doing things like yearly sets for, you know, for like 1951, you know, an alternate.
That's pretty cool. Do you have like these online or anything where people can appreciate them? Or
in the blog, I used a lot of the Packer cards, which is
okay. Why don't you give us the URL for that, and we'll also post it in the show notes.
That's a good question.
Or, well, I'll tell you what, you could send that to me later and
Google
I'll put
Packers Pass Perfect.
hackerspathsperfect.com. But that's a mouthful there. Okay, well.
It's a WordPress thing, but I'm not sure exactly what the, well, I don't remember what the exact URL is anymore.
Okay, well, folks, I will do. Some of you are driving a car when you're listening to or at the gym. I will put it in the show notes. I'll look it up. We'll get it in there, get the information from John and put it in there so you can enjoy some of his work, his blog post, and some of these card sets. That sounds really intriguing. So, yeah, thank you for that. Now, what are some of the titles of the book set that you've written? I didn't realize you authored some books too.
Well, let's see. The first one I did was Packers by the Numbers, which was told the history of the Packers with 100 chapters, one chapter for each uniform number pertaining to a player, telling a story. It's sort of along the lines of the history of such and such and such and such number of objects. That sort of, it was that sort of thing. I did that. I did one of those for the Eagles too. Did a couple of books on the Giants for Triumph Press. I did a book called The Quarterback Abstract for Triumph. That was a number of years ago. For McFarland, I did uniform numbers of the NFL, which it's a reference work for any of us who watch, old football film. It's even listing numbers and so forth through the different teams. I did biographical dictionary of NFL coaches for McFarland. I did a book called Strong Arm Tactics, which was the history of the quarterback position. As opposed to the quarterback abstract, which was entries on, well, to the point it was written, which was around 2008, 2009, it covered everybody every quarterback who had started at least 10 games up to that point. That was the cutoff point. Most recent book I did was called Pioneer Coaches of the NFL by Roman and Littlefield was the publisher. And that covered coaches up to 1950, major coaches up to 1950, a baker's dozen of coaches, sort of ending with the beginning of Paul Brown's career. So,
Yeah, that sort of changed coaching right there when Paul Brown came about.
well, it's, but it, it, the point of the book is to establish, to show how these early coaches kind of established the position and developed the game. I mean, before Paul Brown, let's say, pro coaches didn't have the respect that college coaches did. I mean, talked about a football coach, you'd be talking about, I mean, people would think about Amos Alonzo Stagg or Pop Warner or whatever, but they weren't going to, think about pro coaches. But I mean, over time that developed, and these guys developed the strategies, developed the practice habits. I mean, everything. It was just to make it into a profession. I mean, it wasn't just, I mean, when in the early days of the NFL, it was mostly player coaches. I mean, I think it was like, oh, in the 20s, I think it was like 75% of coaches were player coaches, something like that. But then, the 30s, that fades out. So the only player coaches since Johnny McNally, Johnny Blood left in 39, I guess, where there was the Chicago Rockets. Yeah, Chicago Rockets in the All-America Conference for a brief time in their first year after they fired their coach, they had three other players act as co-coaches. So for like half the season, and then they brought one of the original assistant coaches back to be a head coach. So it was a very strange thing. But I mean, yeah, player coaches went the way of the dinosaurs,
Yeah, I think back those early eras, and you think about Guy Chamberlain and Johnny Blood, like you said, and Jimmy Konzelman, all definitely player coaches. So interesting, interesting.
Well, this one it covered Chamberlain Leroy Andrew from the Giants, Curly Lambeau, and George Halas. George Halas is actually in two chapters as the person who kept the T formation alive, and then the person who kept who made the T formation something everybody wanted to use. But those two chapters, one is George Halas with Dutch Sterneman, who was the co-coach and co-owner of the team for the first 10 years. And then Ralph Jones, who was their coach as freshman at Illinois before Zupke, before they, you know, what came varsity with Zupke, and also was like their basketball coach, I think, there. And so they had an established relationship with Jones. So once they became at loggerheads and couldn't stand each other, can't stand working with each other, and still had to work out who was going to own the team, they brought in Jones for 3 years. Then the second chapter with Halas is Halas and Jones and Clark Shaughnessy, and how they brought the T formation into the jet age, basically, and then made it something that everybody said, well, that's what we should be using. And the single wing went away, at least in the pro game.
Right. Wow. Interesting. Now, are these titles that you wrote, are they still available for sale?
Oh, yeah.
Are like
I mean,
on Amazon?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Just
search your name and come up. Okay. Wow. I mean, because you're playing a lot of sweet music to our ears here in the listenership. You know, here, Pigskin Dispatch, we did a series probably about 3 or 4 years ago on every jersey number. So you said, you know, you have a book on jersey numbers. And we actually started a sister site, the Sports Jersey Dispatch, which is jersey numbers of other sports other than, that's football in it too, but the other three major sports in North America. So we love jersey numbers, and we, you know, we like to talk about that a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've had a lot of episodes about these coaches and player coaches. So this is great stuff. You know. Now, you wrote a lot about the Packers. You have a blog site on the Packers. Some of your books are about the Packers. Where did your interest in the Packers come from? Because you're told me you're calling from the East Coast, which is kind of far away from Milwaukee and Green Bay.
I'm from Atlantic City originally. I grew up in the 60s, so I was attracted to the
they were the team.
and then maintained that over the years. So the last 30 some years have been great. It's like 30 years before that were pretty lousy. And so you started out with Lombardi, and it was a long dry spell. And then it's been very nice for the past 30 years.
They've had the last 30 years. They've had some pretty decent quarterbacks play there. That helps out a lot, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. So now how was that to be, you know, over on the East Coast, you know, where I would assume it's probably like New York Giants, New York Jets, pretty dominated in your area.
I'm in South Jersey, so it's more Eagles.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Giants are pretty hated around here.
But to be a Packers fan there, that's got to be a little bit.
Well, it's not bad. I mean, if I were a Cowboys fan, that would be difficult, or a Giants fan, but but I would have trouble with myself if I were a Dallas Cowboy fan as well. I don't like them.
Yeah, I am in Western Pennsylvania, and I grew up in the 70s. So of course, I'm a Steelers fan. So and I sort of have bad feelings about the Cowboys. You know, three Super Bowl meetings with my team, and there's sort of a rival that them and the Raiders. Out of division teams, there's just some brutal games that those teams played in the 70s. But
they were great,
all
they
good
were great
fun.
Teams, yeah,
yeah.
It's kind of like the games the Steelers and the Ravens played back in the last decade. I think of Polamalu and Ed Reed.
Oh yeah! Wow, two great safeties there.
Yeah, those games were just—they were always close and just hard hitting. They were just really good stuff.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering. I'm seeing a lot of the fallout. You know, the folks. So, you know, we have this pre-recorded here a couple of days before it's airing. But today, news broke that the Steelers signed Patrick Queen, a linebacker from the Ravens, and
I'm surprised to see
Marvin Humphreys and some other Ravens are chiming in. I see that they're heartbroken. He went to the enemy. Probably would be the same way if we saw a Steeler going over to the Ravens. It would probably break our. Of course, it's breaking my heart that Derrick Henry signed with the Ravens today. He's a man to tackle.
I'm not happy that Aaron Jones went to the Vikings. I mean,
right, yeah.
I don't know how much he's got left in the tank, but I hate to see it come out on the field against the Packers, just like when Favre went there,
Yeah, that's kind of an odd thing. Now, what do you think about that? Okay, as a Packers fan, you talk about Favre a little bit. What do we have, like 10 years ago, Favre goes to the Jets and then goes to the Vikings.
Now, probably longer than that, but
maybe,
I don't
okay, maybe I'm aging myself here a little bit. Okay. But, you have Rodgers leaving the Packers, going to the Jets. Maybe he ends up a Viking, but it's kind of odd how those paths are similar that the teams that they travel to.
Well, in both cases, I think I know personally, it was kind of like they had done everything they were going to do with the Packers and it was time for them to go. I mean, Favre, it was a great player, but at the same time, without Holmgren there, he lost some discipline as years went on. And it was just, I'd watch him sometimes. And I remember going to see the Eagles play, see them play the Eagles in Philly. And they were behind, but they were coming back at the end. There was plenty of time. It was like 2 minutes left. They're midfield and the short passes are working, but he's got to throw deep, and he's got to throw in deep where there's three guys covering one guy, and interception, game over. It's too much of that at the end of his career.
Yeah, they were both sort of pushed out by younger up and coming quarterbacks that had some hope too. So similar path. So
yeah, Rodgers is his own sort of very odd diva, and you have some sympathy for, okay, well, I guess their defense was never quite good enough to give him the support he needed. But at the same time, there was something lacking in leadership there with him. I think he would hang his head when things went bad, as opposed to somebody like a Brady who just would never give up. So,
yeah.
So great, both great quarterbacks, but after 16 years or so, it's okay to move on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, as a not being a Packers fan, not really having any skin in the game watching him, I enjoyed watching them both play. Some of my fond memories. I love the gunslinger mentality of Favre. He thought he could stick a ball into any space. Sometimes it backfired on him, but so many times, God, he made some plays that were so amazing and off balance throws and just the arm strength. And Rodgers, I sit there and I just think about, he did it a couple different seasons where they had middle of the season, everybody's leaving the Packers for dead, and he makes a dramatic statement of, hey, we're going to go on a run, and they go on a run and make the playoffs, and he makes some amazing plays. It's just, you got to respect that for those two quarterbacks, what they accomplished. So,
but it's also, I talk about 16 years. Well, Roethlisberger was in Pittsburgh around that amount of time too. And at the end, I would think a Steelers fan was probably ready to move on, because he wasn't the same player the last couple of years. I mean, they didn't have anything better, unfortunately, but he was just hanging on, really.
I think that, I don't think it really parallels what you guys went through with the Packers, because Bradshaw, I'll put him in there too, Bradshaw and Roethlisberger, they're each over a decade of success, winning Super Bowls, and they both have a horrific injury and they try to come back from it and they're just not the same player anymore. Where there wasn't that line of demarcation, I think, for Rodgers and Favre. They were still playing at a high level, and maybe they weren't them, maybe just shadows of what they were a few years earlier, but they're still winning. You're still, I mean, I would have took either one of them and had them on my team at that time, I tell you that. But that's just as Rodgers pushing Favre out, your I forget what's the quarterback is there now that sort of pushed Rodgers out,
Jordan
the
Love,
Love, that's right. Yeah, I mean he, who knows, he could be another great franchise quarterback. He had a
we'll
great end of the
see.
season. He played fantastic.
Very promising in his first year as starter. So we'll see what
Yeah.
happens.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, let's get into, you talked a little bit about the Coffin Corner articles you write each year on these, these 50 titles for football fans. Now, I see this isn't all just pro football. You're putting in a PFRA, but there are some college games. Maybe, like I see, Tommy Phillips, who's a Sports History Network, which I belong to too. Of he's a podcaster on there, wrote a book on the Orange Bowl, but the Orange Bowl has some ties into some Super Bowls and things like that. Now, is that a prerequisite? It's got to be pro football, or is it just something that football fans would be interested in reading?
It's generally pro football or some but usually I'll have throw in a couple of books that might have some sort of tangential connection to pro football, somebody involved who's was well known as a pro player, or sometimes it's just that a book that's just so good, even though it's about high school football, that I mean, I feel like I should put it in there. And I note that in there that this is not about pro football, but
Well, as an avid reader, I appreciate lists like that. So, I read multiple football books every month and enjoy that. So, you have some great titles. I guess this 2023, you start off and you tell us, a lot of there's a good handful of books that are on the defending champions, which were the Kansas City Chiefs last year. Again, just won the Super Bowl recently. So, is that sort of a trend that happens? You said you've been doing this for about a decade now. Whoever wins the Super Bowl, they sort of have a plethora of books come out.
usually, I guess some markets more than others. I mean, New England was always there, and if a New York team wins, then of course. But it's usually going to be, books about the champions.
Yeah.
Not always the greatest books, but.
Yeah, you're probably not seeing too many bestsellers coming out like about the Carolina Panthers this year because they're on the other end of the spectrum. You got to go to the trending topics, right?
But sometimes it sometimes they hit the sweet spot. I mean, my still one of my all-time favorites is Instant Replay. So and that Jerry Kramer's book about the 67 Packers, he just I mean that was just perfect timing. I mean, be doing a diary of the, and this was before football books were all that common. So yeah,
Yeah,
it's
there's a lot of good old football books. I enjoy that. I don't know if I've read that Kramer's book, but reading some books from the 60s era. I forget the official's name, Norm Schlachter. He was the official on the Ice Bowl, and I forget the name of his book, but that was interesting. Of course, I'm an ex football official, high school football official, so I found that interesting. But only one whistle blown the whole game of the Ice Bowl, which I never realized. That was for the opening kickoff. But the reason they stopped blowing the whistles because the metal whistles they used that froze to the umpire's lip. So it's just a little.
It's odd that this story came out a couple days ago that X number of Kansas City fans have to have digits amputated or something for
Yeah.
frostbite. So I don't remember hearing any stories like that about the Ice Bowl. I mean, I don't know. And it seems like, well, there's so many other, so many, ways to keep warm these days. I mean, I wouldn't be sitting out there then, but it seems like if you were sitting out there, they'd be you'd have electric socks and everything else, whatever. But
course, there was some crazed fans out there with no shirts on. I remember that Miami Kansas City game from this past year that was a minus 20-degree wind chill. It, so I don't know if I'd want that. So probably, you feel bad for the poor if some folks came up from South Beach to watch their Dolphins play, and even the Dolphins players. Oh, gosh, that's got quite a shock.
Well, players at least get to run around. Fans don't.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, that is it's very tragic, though. People have some digits being amputated from the frostbite. It's a dangerous thing. So yeah, but you don't hear anything about that from the Ice Bowl. That's right. So
Or
very harsh.
the game in Cincinnati, the Freezer Bowl. I mean, I don't remember. I mean, maybe it wasn't publicized, or I don't know.
Yeah, of course, the ESPNs and aren't as prevalent, and the internet wasn't existing in those games, and so maybe we just it happened and we don't know. They were in secret. So now people post everything on social media. You know when they go to the bathroom at the ball games. Who knows? Going back here to the process of do you choose 50 books every year every time you publish this? Is that sort of the
There's no set number. It's usually around 50. That's what's out there. I mean, but it's not like I'm looking for, a particular number of books. It's just I'm trying to get everything that's published. There's some things I miss. And there's some things that, as I state in the introduction each time, that I don't really cover anything like, books that are just, endless editions of, like, tales from the such and such sidelines and that sort of stuff. And nothing wrong with them. It's just that it's not really new. It's just they're just creating new editions of it. In religious books, and not that I have anything against religion, it's just religious sports books tend to be a little sappy. It's not really, I think, what people are looking for, as far as people who'd be looking at PFRA.
Yeah, you got to know your audience, and PFRA, we're all football historians, so we want the facts. So yeah, very, very interesting. And these are all nonfiction books too. I think you make that point out too. So yeah, interesting. So is that kind of, I mean, it's kind of shocking to me that there's over four dozen books every year coming out on the game of football. I mean, it's just I guess I never really thought about it, but I mean, that seems like a big number to coming out every year of new books that you've chosen for this.
Well, there's a lot of things put out. I mean, at one point, I never followed through on this, but I was working on a project of an annotated bibliography of every book on pro football for the first 50 years, from up through 1969. And I think I ended up with about 250 books.
Wow.
So over 50 years. So it's it's a big change as to how much is being put out now as to what was put out in the past. I mean, start to build in the 60s, really.
Now, is that kind of interesting to you? I mean, with so many different forms of media that we have available today, like we just talked about, social media, the internet, 24-hour television shows on NFL football. We can get our football feed, all year long from other mediums besides the written word. And with you see magazines and newspapers drying up, but books seem to be just as popular and frequent now as maybe they were like that first 50 years of pro football, like you said, where you found 250 of them. Is that surprising?
I don't know what sales figures are like, but yeah, they're still putting them out. And I enjoy reading them. So.
Yeah, as I do, and many of the listeners too. So, yeah, interesting.
Personally, I still like to read a physical book too, but that seems to be going away. I mean, I also one other thing that I did for about 15 years was there's a magazine called Library Journal, and I did a roundup of new football books each year for, like I said, it was 13, 15 years, something like that. It ended during COVID. just kind of died out. But originally I'd get the galleys, the bound copy of the book before it was printed. But as in the more recent years, it moves more and more, they just send me a PDF of the book. So I'd have to read it on a computer.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. Now, how do you find out about the books? I mean, I know you're a librarian. Do you have like this insider information because you can see what's available? Or
no, I just go through, there's a database called WorldCat, which is, it tries to list all books that are published. I'm sure it doesn't, but at least all books that are published by standard publishing houses. And just going through Amazon, trying to pick up things that I missed that way. And like I said, Mark would usually find a couple things that I had missed. Sometimes it would be stuff that he works for McFarland, so sometimes I'd miss something that they had coming out that I didn't see and notice for. But
interesting.
A lot of McFarland's published a lot of football books and other sports as well over the years.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So I assume you're probably already working on the 2024 list. You're probably gathering titles as you go through the months, or do you just like wait and try to collect them all at one point? And
yeah, I do it in the fall.
Okay. Gotcha.
I mean, I try and pay attention, just looking for things that I might want to read, but but it's not any sort of organized attack.
I gotcha. So that's a little bit different how I figured it. See, from my aspect, because I have so many authors on, usually I have publicists or the authors or the publishers will send me information and say, hey, we got this book out. Would you like to have them on as the author on as a guest, or, they're trying to make their tour allura, to promote their book. So I get mm-hmm. to see things that way. But it's a little bit different. I'm not familiar with the Wildcat and, searching for Amazon for football books. Gosh, you could sit there for hours, just typing, American football or gridiron or any terms mm-hmm. like that in there. So interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, do you have any projects cooking going up this year for football that you want to talk about to let people know about? Any books in writing? Or
right now, I'm working on something on the 1966 season, which was, if you listen to any broadcast, and they talk about a record or something, you'll often say qualify with, in the Super Bowl era.
Right.
Anything before the Super Bowl era doesn't really count. So anyway, I'm going to year one of that. I spend a lot of time at NFL Films because that's just up the road from my house, looking at old film. So, I've seen the full year of 1966 of the NFL. AFL, there wasn't as much there. But so I'm working on that right now. And I'd like to do something correspond with the 60th anniversary, 2026. So I have plenty of time. done a lot of research, starting doing interviews and go from there.
Well, keep us posted on that, and we'd love to have you on when that comes out, and
Okay, thanks.
let you promote it and talk about that too. So, John, really appreciate you coming on here. I mean, you got some interesting titles, which I know I'm gonna go through the Amazon and be buying some books here to read here in the near future. You know, because your titles are enormous, and these titles that you present in the Coffin Corner are great as well. And really, really appreciate you coming on and talking some football history and sharing with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. Always happy to talk football.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.